You're listening to Belly Up to the Blackboard, the podcast made for teachers by teachers. From classroom chaos to those unforgettable student moments, we'll cover the ins and outs of education and share the advice you need to avoid the biggest pitfalls. So belly up, grab your favorite drink, and let's get started.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Today we've got Ryan Irwin in here, which is great. We've got an interview. Just a quick little bit about Ryan. I'm going to read through this. It says Ryan was a serial entrepreneur. His professional endeavors include serving as a full-time fitness and nutrition coach, promoting bodybuilding competitions, managing a portfolio as a real estate investor, and writing as a published author. He is driven by a commitment to help others achieve their peak potential and live their best life across all domains. So, Ryan, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, hey, thank you, Chris. Great to be here. Really appreciate the invitation.
Yep, and so let's get into it. So, you're doing a lot of things, right? So tell us how it all got started. So what was step one?
Yeah, step one, and I had no idea this was going to lead to all of this, but step one was actually going way back to high school. So back in 92, I got the idea that I wanted to become a bodybuilder. And so I used to work out at the old, at Seidel. Behind the bleachers was the weight room. And so whenever there was a home basketball game, we had to literally move the whole weight room out from behind the bleachers. I love telling that story because it sucked so much. But, you know, those humble beginnings. And so, again, back in high school, I talked to one of my buddies that did bodybuilding. And I said, hey, what does it take? He said, you just got to be dedicated. Be committed. I'm like, okay, I can do that. And so fast forward, I did my first bodybuilding competition as barely 16 in high school. And at the time I thought, you know, okay, that's cool. You know, I got on stage. I feel good about myself. I like how I look. I had no idea what that would actually do to me mentally and help me give myself that level of discipline that I needed that's just carried me through the rest of life. No idea at the time, but that's what it really kind of started. And then everything's just kind of grown from there.
And then, so when you started and you started competing, you know, what were you doing while you were competing? Because probably at the beginning, it wasn't a full-time gig for you.
No, gosh, no. I mean, I started again when I was in high school, and then when I went to Iowa State, I was in exercise and sports science. I was dietetics and then transferred to exercise and sports science, or kinesiology, as it's called now. Mm-hmm. And I knew that was the industry I wanted to be in.
Okay.
And so I was immersed in it, you know, continued to compete, you know, in high school and college, you know, married, little kids, big kids, career changing. So it's been throughout my whole life. But that's really it, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. I just didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. And so then I started getting into business, and because I got married when we were young and needed a job, needed some money,
had a bill to have pay, that money.
Right? So I knew I needed to make some money. So I went down the business path, and that's where I then converged the two roads, because then I found the business side of health and fitness, and then I took the just regular business and then merged the two.
Okay. Okay. And how long did that take, do you think, until you fully were now your full-time coach while bodybuilding?
Yeah. So I've actually had two entrepreneurial stints. So my first one was, I'm trying to remember, it was probably around 2003. I actually had a nutrition store. We had a training studio in the back. At its height, we had three locations. And, you know, we were selling supplements and training people and all that. And that's where I discovered coaching, because, you know, I'd have customers come in, and instead of like talking to them about vitamins and minerals and, you know, fish oil and whatever, I was talking to them about their nutrition and what are they doing for the workouts and, hey, how's their schedule and all that. And, you know, I was just like, wow, this is what I need to be doing. And so long story short, ended up, you know, those businesses, we shut those down, and I jumped into coaching. And while I was doing that, I went back to corporate America after, you know, being an entrepreneur for 10 years so I could build that business back up. And then after 10 years of that, or 5 years of that, then I jumped back into full-time entrepreneurship as a coach.
So. Felt like you were ready to,
yeah,
to take the leap again.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, build that up. And then obviously while doing that, you know, building up the financial nest egg, if you will. So mm-hmm. then that way when I left corporate, even though I was taking a 50% pay cut, you know, I could weather that storm And then, you know, within 6 months, I had made all of that up and then even more. So it was definitely the right move, but I was also glad of the way I did it. So
was it scary, like, just jumping off and saying, I'm going to go do this?
Well, it's funny because I've done it twice now. I've resigned. So the first time I did it was, again, back in 2003. And I had a partner and we had the nutrition store. And my manager at the time, he told me, he's like, hey, Ryan, I got offered another job. Sorry, it's my 2 weeks. And so I made a decision literally, I think it was the next day I went and I turned in my 2 weeks notice.
Oh my
I'm
gosh.
Like, yeah. So that, and I don't recommend that, by the way. Yeah. I mean, that was a little bit, that was risky and then jumping in with both feet, but burning the ships and everything. But, yeah. You know, the second time I did it was more thought through. And I knew, okay, that's, again, setting myself up for success and doing it from a more thoughtful approach. Mm-hmm. But again, it goes back to stepping on that stage back when I was a teenager. I mean, I have always been just, you know, hey, let's take risk. Let's not be afraid of it. Let's go for it. And that is what bodybuilding has given me. I mean, when you stand up on stage half naked in front of hundreds of people, you start to lose a little bit of a, all right, well, let's just do it, you know?
Yep.
And so that's I think, a big part of that. And that's why I said I had no idea that bodybuilding would teach me that. But throughout the years, as I've met other people, I've coached lots of people, I see that. I see a lot of entrepreneurs or high achievers or people who have done stuff just because, you know, they're driven and willing to take risks. And that's just part of that mindset.
Like you said, once you get on stage like that, that's a pretty big risk.
Yeah. you're kind of exposed.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Not hiding anything.
So were you married when you took the first risk?
Yes.
So how was that? How was that conversation?
Yes.
With your wife when you're like, hey, I think I want to do this.
Yeah, no, I married up. My wife has always been nothing but supportive and she's amazing. And, you know, she's like, I believe in you. You know, yeah. I mean, we have our foundations on God. We have a strong faith hinge. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, trusting in him, you know, and then trusting in each other and supporting each other. And so, yeah, and we were, you know, we started having kids right out of gate. So I had two young kids, I think at the time they were maybe 5 or 6. And so it was like, you know, just this had to work, had to make it work, yeah. You know, so it wasn't any options.
So where did you start? So once you started coaching full time, where was it? Where did you open up a place? You know, where'd you start?
Yeah. So I was coaching part time for many, many years, but when I did full time, I did it at my house. Because, again, going back to having the store, I loved what I was doing. I loved the customers, loved everything about the industry, but it wasn't conducive to family life. You know, I'd go in there at 5 a.m, we'd have training, and then after that, you know, we'd have the store, and then after running the retail shop, then we'd have books and emails and stuff, and so I had no life outside of that.
Yeah.
And so when I reinvented the my brand and my business, I'm like, I want to do this conducive to that. So I work out of my house, you know, my coaching it's online, and so I control my hours. I'm not in the gym physically with my clients, but I write all their programs, I control all their nutrition, and I've got clients all over the country, and I can do that all out of my house now online. And so again, it gives me the flexibility to do the things that I want to do.
Did you start with it doing online, or was it meeting in the house first and then you started to find, like, how did you find people out, like, you know, around the country?
Yeah.
And how did to figure out how to meet with them, right?
Yeah, it's just basically word of mouth, referral basis. And I mean, back when I had the store, I mean, I was personal training. You know, I was in the gym and I loved it. It was a blast. I enjoyed it. But you can't scale that. You know, it's, again, you're trading literally an hour for a dollar. You know, and you can only do that so much. And so that's when, you know, again, technology and stuff is, you know, using, I have an app that I use with my clients and just all the different interfaces and then just being able to do that. And then again, with Zoom and things, so I can have consultations online. And so, yeah, it's just really kind of evolved.
Okay. Nice. So having it in the house, does that help with balance, or does that, like, do they start to blend together? Like personal life and, you know, and professional life. Cause like with us, you know, teaching, we do some work at home probably, but you kind of have that, that separation, that drive home, almost like is when you start to separate it.
Yeah, no, it is a challenge. It's an adjustment, but I think that's why I'm huge on my calendar. Like everything I do, I put on my calendar. You know, I mean, whether it's, you know, appointment, it's my training time, it's my when I eat, it's when I shut things down. You know, I mean, have to double down on that because, again, working from home and being your own boss, you have the freedom, but to your point, Chris, that can actually be a hindrance. And so giving myself as much structure as possible is key. And it's something I constantly, you know, have to fight and focus on is like shutting things down at a certain time, you know, making it a priority to have time with family or to, you know, turn off the screens. You know, my phone turns off at a certain night and I leave it in the kitchen, you know, it goes away. And so, but it's, you know, constantly trying not to be always at work. So,
and that's a hard thing to do to separate screens. It's because it's just right there, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah. So keeping it somewhere where you have it off or, and I put mine at do not disturb at certain points. Cause it's like, you can't, you know, you feel like you're, what is it, FOMO? You feel the fear of missing out, right? Yeah. So you're, if you don't force yourself to do it, it's easy to just have it in your hand and always checking something else instead of being present.
And setting that expectations up with my clients. Like they know that, hey, I'm online for this time to this time. I'm not online after that. I will get back to them within 24 hours. I'm not online like Sundays. I'm offline, you know. So letting them know what those expectations are because, again, you know, you're wondering what's going on. It's like, okay, it'll wait. Now, if there's an emergency pop-up, yeah, they can get a hold of me. But if it's just normal stuff, hey, here's my body weight. Here's what I hit a PR today. Okay, that's fine. It'll be there when I come back tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so your kids grew up while you were doing this, right? So did they live in the gym with you? Because I know like my kids are 14 and 11 now. So coaching, they're with me all the time. Yeah. Like when we're, and that's the nice thing about them being in the school that we're at is that they're able to, you know, when we have track meets, they're there helping set up stuff. Yeah. And they've done that since they were kids and when I was coaching football. So did the kids kind of grow up into the gym?
Little bit, yeah. I mean, we have a home gym and we train at home most of the time now, and so it's kind of been part of our lifestyle. And same thing with the nutrition, you know, like both of my kids at an early age knew what the protein was and like, you know, well, I got my protein, Dad, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So they've been around it, you know, and we've got some cute pictures of like me posing and flexing with the kids and they're flexing too and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, as they've grown, my kids are 25 and 26 now. I mean, they found their fitness journey. We didn't like force it on them. But they were around it so much and then they've come to it, which is awesome. You know, my son and I, we work out often together. My daughter, she's running and she's very active and we've done some working out. And it's just, I love it as a dad just to see those foundational things that were instilled. And we always talk, there's more that's caught than taught, you know? And I think that over time, that's just, you know, it's kind of just happened organically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And leading by example, I think is a big part of it. Cause like you said, if you try to force your kids into it, a lot of times there's some pushback, but if they see this is what dad does and this is what mom does, it's kind of like, it's just what we do.
Yeah, right? That's right. Yeah.
So when did you decide that you're going to hang up the performance, like performing on stage and just go into the coaching then?
Yeah, well, so candidly, I'm still competing. My last show I did was 3 years ago, I think now. So I'm still actively competing. Now I don't compete as frequently as I did when I was younger.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm still doing it. But I think that, you know, now as more of a profession and I've achieved, you know, the things I set out to do, you know, as a competitor, you know, I got a pro card, I've won a pro contest. And so I hit some big benchmarks. So now it's more about just doing it for the fun of it and longevity of it. You know, I'm doing a powerlifting meet here in another week. And again, it's just to have fun, just to prove to myself that I can still do it.
Okay. So, nice.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. So can you walk us through, so as a coach, can you walk us through like a week, how long does a meet last, I guess?
Yeah.
Like is it a weekend? Is it, yeah. Or competition?
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. It's kind of 2 days. So like Friday, everybody gets checked in, you know, you have to go and verify, you know, weight. And if it's a drug test, a contest, you have to take drug tests and things like that. And so Friday, get your tan. That's a big part of it. You know, get that about the color of this table here. That's about right. You know, do all that and get prepped. And then the competition on set lasts all day Saturday. So you do, you know, they'll bring everybody together and compete together, flexing on stage. You'll do a routine. and then give out awards and stuff. So it's kind of an all-day deal. But, of course, the things leading up to that, there's a lot with nutrition and peaking and mm-hmm. making sure everything's nice and tight and full and all of that.
So. Is there like a – so I think, like, with wrestling and, like, let's say mixed martial arts, there's cutting weight. Is there, like, a lot of that right before weigh-ins and – or – check-in and everything?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's more about unless you're in a competition where there's a weight class cutoff and you're really close, it's more about just trying to look as full as possible. So it's different, but it's similar because you're manipulating, you know, your carbohydrates, your sodium, your water. It's not so much to drop the weight. It's more about just how you look, but it's different, but it's very much the same.
Okay.
So
what would you have, like, I guess what's the goal for it? Is it because I have no idea, right? I'm not showing up.
It's a whole different world. No, really, it is.
So is it? Are they trying to get pop the veins and things like that? And how do they, like, what do they eat to do that?
Yeah, so that is. I mean, you want your skin to be as tight as possible. And you want your muscles to be as full as possible. You want to be vascular, all of those things. And so the things that you do leading up to that is, carbohydrates follow water. And so you have the carbohydrates and you get the water in your, which then helps those muscles get nice and full. Sodium is kind of the throttle, you know, how much or how little water is held on to. And so you manipulate all those variables. But again, backing up like weeks and months, you know, it's getting that body fat down to a point where that all matters, you know, because the body fat, if it's not down low enough, none of that matters, you know. And it's like, well, you know, instead of worrying about peak week, it's like you should probably 6 more weeks of dieting or whatnot. But it's not just a weight loss contest. It's getting that body fat down because you have to keep the muscle. Mm-hmm. You know, crash dieting is not going to do it. You know, it has to be gradual and stuff. So,
and what's what body fat do they like? Is there a certain one for everybody, or is it like differentiated? This guy needs 3% or whatever, 5%.
Yeah, it really depends. I mean, because there's different categories, and depending on the category, and really also the individual. Like you said, like a female obviously is not going to get as lean as a male, but a male bodybuilder is going to be, you know, more shredded than say somebody who's in a classic competition or something. So there's different levels, and everybody wears it differently too.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So you said you're going to be doing powerlifting here soon. Mm-hmm. So how do you prep for that? How is that different? Obviously, I mean, there's obviously differences, but how do you prep for that?
Yeah, it's just the training, and you know, you're pushing yourself to get stronger. Like in bodybuilding, nobody cares how strong you are. They don't care. It's how you look, right? Well, for powerlifting, it's all about strength. Nobody cares what you look like, and that's why if you go to a powerlifting meet, you'll see some guys that don't care what they look like. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But you know, it's progressively increasing that your strength in the gym. And a common misconception with powerlifting is when you're training and getting ready to it, you're always maxing out. And that's not true. You get stronger doing sub-maximal lifts. I mean, you're still training hard, but 80, 85%, maybe touch 90%. But really, those max lifts are only really done in the meet. Mm-hmm. You might get a little close to them every now and again just to kind of gauge stuff. But it's about, you know, timing it right. And then, of course, staying healthy and injury-free.
Yeah. So. And then, so do you take, is there some where you take some days off right before a meet?
Oh, yeah.
Like powerlifting meet?
And that, and bodybuilding, like, and powerlifting, just about any sport. I mean, I can't think of a sport that you don't taper before the actual performance. Yeah. And it's the same way with bodybuilding and powerlifting. And that's the hardest week, you know, because your nerves are going, you're anxious, you're like, all right, let's go. And you have to back off. It's hard.
Yeah. And we have that with track, right? Because like you want to get as fast as possible, you know, as you know, do as well as you can. But, and it's tough with kids sometimes because they're like, I have to work as hard as I can all the time. It's like, you have to take that time to, one, recover.
That's right.
And then the day before a meet, it's like, let's just get it as short as possible. We can get it. You feel good. We're done. Because otherwise they'll just keep pushing themselves.
Yeah. We're really, the last couple of years, been really stressing like pre-meet, and our kids are finally starting to realize like, oh, it's pre-meet. We're just getting in, getting out.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you push too hard, you're just, one, risk of injury, right?
Yeah.
And two, it's like you're going to spend all your energy today, and tomorrow, which would be a recovery day, is a meet, and you're not going to perform as well.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Switching gears a little bit. So it's also real estate investor. So let's talk about that. So how did that start?
Yeah. So, I mean, being self-employed, I mean, you know, I certainly had 401k and all that when I was in corporate, but that all, you know, goes away once you're self-employed. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, where can I put my cash as a way to, you know, build up that retirement and have that down the road. And the other thing about being a coach is it's a cash-based business. You know, I mean, you have very little write-offs, and so you just get crushed by taxes. So yeah. I'm like, all right, one of my other really good friends who's an entrepreneur, and he does real estate. He's like, he goes, Ryan, he goes, you really ought to check this out. And so I'm like, oh, okay. And so finally I did, and back in 2021, bought our first rental property from my in-laws. And so that was the genesis of it. And then from there, you know, we've just continued to go down that path. And being self-employed and as an entrepreneur, it just leads itself to that industry and being able to be an investor, you know, give me that flexibility to do those things. And I've got, you know, partnerships with other business partners, and we've got, you know, we flip houses, we've got short-term rentals, long-term rentals, we do some private lending, all of those things. But again, just it supplements that, you know, the lifestyle that, again, designing it to how we want to live, because it's passive. I mean, real estate's not truly passive, but it continues to work even if you're not. That's kind of one of the big incentives with it.
You don't have to be there every day.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So we talked about balance between life and work, right? How do you balance work and work?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, you talked about, you know, your calendar. Are there certain days you have set aside, or is it just like you're checking in with your business partners on the real estate side of it 2 hours a day or once a week, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm big on systems and processes. So, you know, I grew my coaching business to the point where, okay, I've got a lot of systems and processes in place. I have an assistant that helps me out with all of that and helps keep things in line and, you know, delegating duties and things of that nature. So streamlining that. And so once that's up and humming at a good pace, then it's like, okay, now I've got bandwidth. What else can I do? Okay, real estate. Okay, now let's do that. Same thing. Let's just rinse and repeat. Put in those systems and processes, you know, having sync calls and duties and, you know, going through SOPs and making sure things are operational and just setting those things up in place. So then that way you can do that. And because, again, it's like many, many days in a day. Like I'll have certain part of my day, like I'll have a block of time, like this is when I'm touching base with my clients and checking their reports, and everything else is off the table. And then I've got, you know, again, sync calls with my partners, and this is what the priority is. And then I've got this amount of time where I'm going out and I'm going through the books or whatever. And so it's like many days in the days. And so that way I block out my calendar. So I can go on my calendar right now, like 2 months in advance, and you'll see those blocks on there. And then I just fill in those blocks as I get closer. And so it creates that system. So I can, again, you can't do everything at once, and you shouldn't. So it's like, okay, do this then, this now, and then this then, that type of scenario.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Nice. Yeah. It's, I mean, 'cause those are both your coaching and real estate could both be full-time jobs.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
So, yeah. Yeah.
So, and then on top of that, now you're an author.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, 'cause I think back again, going back to academics in high school, I was a horrible student. I really was. I mean, I did what I had to do just to get by, but you know, if you know, any of my high school teachers, if any of them listening, they'd be like, no way, Irwin's not going to do this. And I just, again, writing the book and stuff, but again, just working with and putting those things in place to do all those. And I go back and I look at high school, and I was very social and doing those things, and obviously finding bodybuilding and all that. I was actually, and back then they didn't have like entrepreneurship as a class or course, like even at Iowa State that I was aware of. But I can see all those pieces and how that was setting me up for what I'm doing right now. So.
So what is the book about? What it's about.
Yeah. So it's Everyday Count. It's Living Your Best Life Ever. And it basically what it's all about is how to design your life in a way that you live it the way you want to live it. So I started off with going through my life story and kind of, again, taking me back from, you know, childhood to where I'm at now. But then also the systems that I've done, that I use on a daily basis to help stay organized, stay focused. You know, I'm huge on setting goals and putting in processes in place to help attain those goals. And so I'm big on tracking and all of those things. So it's really kind of a, the first part is a, what I did. And then the rest of it's kind of a how to, and then I take pieces of my life story and I put those into those instructions or plans of how this worked for me and how it hopefully could work for somebody else.
Now, is it like privately published or do you go through a publisher?
Self-published. It's on Amazon. I did hire an editor. It was actually a retired English professor at Drake. And I think we had fun. We had a lot of fun with it. Yeah. She taught me so much. It was a really cool process to do that. And I knew I was not a very good writer at the time, but I learned so much from her. And now, I mean, again, I like to put out a lot of content on social media, my website and stuff. I'm using those skills more than I ever thought I would.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and part of your intro was, you know, living your best life across domain. So how would you describe that, living your best life?
Yeah. You know, I think the big thing is look, I'm always looking 5 years in the future. And so it's like, if what I'm doing right now takes me to that, you know, I want... for me, it's freedom, you know, I'm freedom of the way I live my life, my family, and then my faith. Those are my big three. And so if it doesn't go into one of those things, then I need to say no and not do it. And so, you know, when I'm working with clients or I'm talking to, you know, some, I've got many accountability partners, things like that. It's always about looking down the road and what am I doing now that takes me to that. And for me, if it's giving me that freedom to do those things, then yes, it is. You know, one of the reasons why I became an entrepreneur, I think, is because like my second job out of college, I got laid off. You know, I got laid off. There's like 600 of us that just chopped right there. And I'm just like, oh, well, now what? You know, and so I worked feverishly and thankfully I obviously got another job and stuff, but I'm like, I don't want to be in that position mm-hmm. again, you know, and I wanted to be able to write my own story. And be able to call my own shots and take my own risks. And so that's really what's kind of led me to where I'm at.
Yeah, because getting laid off like that, and it's obviously as a teacher, unless it's something extreme, maybe you don't get hired at the end of the year. But, you know, in corporate, it could be tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a lot of stress
that's
to
scary.
Get.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So. And I've saw my father. He got shafted by a couple of his employers. I'm just like, no. I go, I want to be able to write my story and do it on my terms. And you know, like today, you know, I was like, I spent an hour or two working on client updates, and then I mowed my lawn.
Yeah. I'm like, you can do that because you're your own boss,
right? Yeah. yeah. I mean, I've got a pile of work I can do when I want to do it, type of thing. So.
Yeah. And you get that decision, which is great. So you mentioned 5 years down the road, looking 5 years. So what is 5 years down the road?
Oh, man, 5 years down the road. So I don't know that I will ever – I mean, I'm doing what I love right now. I really am. And if like someone has asked me, like, hey Ryan, what will retirement look like for you? I'm like, in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm retired, you know, yep. because I've already got that freedom. But I think that, you know, again – being able to continue to grow my real estate portfolio, pour it into others. I mean, truly, that's my passion. It's just to help people. I mean, yes, the main conduit's been nutrition, health, and fitness, but a lot of my clients, I mean, we've had some serious conversations about other aspects of their life, and that I go through that in my book. I mean, you've got all those different things. You know, you've got, you know, fitness, your health, you've got financial, you've got relationships, you've got your career. All of those things are interconnected. If one of them is in bad shape, it's going to affect the other ones.
Yeah.
And so just being able to pour into other people and being able to, you know, do more volunteering and more serving and not do it to just pay the bills, but just because I want to.
Yeah.
So that's probably, if I look 5 years down the road, if that continues to happen, if things keep going that way, then I'm in the right direction.
Perfect. And so you mentioned pouring into others. So what would be some skills? And we talked a little bit about it, but because we have kids that watch us on mm-hmm. on TikTok. And
yeah.
So what would be some skills that you would tell them if they're like, hey, this kind of sounds like what I want to do, maybe. What are some things that they should be looking for of whether they have them and, you know, being making those stronger or adding those skills to what they do currently?
Yeah, I would say the biggest one is communication. I mean, I think that's huge. I mean, I don't care what business you're in, what industry you're doing, what your profession is. You have to be able to communicate, and you also need to be able to have others know, like, and trust you, you know, because that's who they want to do business with. That's who they want to hang out with. That's who they want to give a job to or introduce them to somebody else that can give them a job. So really, communication and networking, I think that's the big thing, because, you know, you're just one conversation away from your next breakthrough, and you don't know when that's going to be. You know, I can go back on my career and just see, like, oh, yep, that was one. That was a big one. Oh, there was another one. You have no idea. At the time, that's what those lead to. And so to be able to do that, I think that's foundational. And then, and just find what, like, what's their passion? What do they enjoy doing? But if you have those communication skills and you just have that network, I mean, it's going to open doors.
Yeah. And that's a big thing we preach too with our kids, whether it's in the classroom or whether it's, you know, for our track team, is that you got to communicate. You know, if you're gone a day, or you know, you have to run home because you have to take brother or sister home and you're going to miss or be late, just communicate. And that's the first thing. And that seems like it's hard now with kids because, I mean, as much as they have their phone in their hands, they don't think about, I could just shoot a quick text to somebody, you know, just as a, to communicate. So I think that's a big thing. And I think we see that too in school. And I don't know, Bree, if you can speak on that too in class and the, you know, coaching as well.
Yeah. I think in the classroom, like, if you got, like, some of my kids work so many hours, and, like, I'm not a huge stickler for deadlines. Like, just communicate with me. And if, like, you had to work till 11 o'clock the night before and didn't get your assignment done, like, just tell me that. Like, I'm going to be really flexible. I think we see it, like, in track with, like, kids will tell their friend, like, hey, tell so-and-so that I'm not going to be at practice. And we tell them at the beginning of the year, like, no, you need to tell us that you're not going to be at practice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's, like you had mentioned, like somebody being tired. And you know, when you get into teaching, you want to be that, they always say, like, you got to be the hammer first.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of lighten up a little bit. And then so you get that respect first. And so kids, if they'd sleep in my class, and I have a special ed class, so it's not a gen ed class, so it's smaller, and there's obviously other things going on. And I'd have kids that maybe would sleep in my class. And I'd wake them up and make sure that they're up and they got to be paying attention.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after talking to kids, and it's probably been, I've been doing it for 19 years, so maybe 10 years, halfway through maybe. Then you start to talk to kids and you build those relationships, and they'll tell you that they had to stay up late and watch their kids or their brother or sister because mom and dad had to work late. So it's like, yeah, if you need to sleep in my class because of that, I'd rather have you sleep in my class than somebody else's, because, mm-hmm. you know, I understand now.
Yeah,
I didn't before, but it's that communication piece. So as you build those relationships too, I think that's a big part of it, because you don't know what others, you know, are going through too.
Last year, one of my kids, it was a couple months into the school year, and she wasn't turning any of her assignments in. And I sat down and talked to her one day, and her parents would leave for work at like 5 o'clock at night and work all night. So she was having to parent her three siblings, like feed them dinner, put them to bed. And I didn't know that. So then everything made so much more sense after that.
Yeah, we had, it's been, probably at least 15 years. We had a kid that played football. And usually as you're playing football, you get a little bigger through the season, you lift and things like that, and get stronger. And he was just becoming a ghost, like just skinny, like almost gray sometimes. And so we found out he would go to school, go to practice, and then he'd work overnights till about like 5 or 6 a.m., catch maybe an hour of sleep because he had to help pay for the bills, you know, at home. So it's, it's tough with some of those kids.
Yeah. And you just got to kind of meet them where they're at. Like if some days, if they're going to sleep, they're going to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, obviously it's getting back to that communication piece, but yeah, it's, and you hope that those kids kind of have somebody like you that are leading, that are pouring into them. And that's what we kind of hope that we are doing while we see them in school to help know that there's something else other than where they maybe came from, if it's, you know, they're wanting to get out of that. So
I think if I can, I think another one too, though, is work on yourself. Like I'm a huge writer. Like my morning routine is locked in. Like even if I'm traveling, I got my morning routine. I wake up early. I sacrifice sleep to keep my morning routine in place. But a big part of that is I've got a weekly habit checklist, and this, I've done this for years. I've got journals in my basement, but at any given time, I've got 10 things that I'm scoring myself on. Like, what are 10 things that I need to be doing that moves the needle? You know, and so on that sheet, on it, it could be, you know, I might need to make sure that I'm reading five times a week so that I have five hash marks at the end of the week, you know, or I'm training. Okay, four of those. Or maybe it's spending time with my wife or calling my parents or whatever it is to move the needle. But always, you know, check those habits for that individual, for yourself, what that is that you need to do to improve. And that always changes, you know, throughout life that changes because it's it. We have different things that we need to work on. But, you know, figure out what moves the needle with, again, where you want to be in 5 years and just keep that habit tracker, you know. And again, kids, you know, regardless of where they are, we can always work on themselves, you know, so.
Yep, yeah, and it's easy to get into habits, whether they're bad habits or, you know, right. With good habits, it's always harder because you're doing something other than what you've probably been doing. Mm-hmm. So having something to check yourself, whether it's every day or, you know, like you said, at the end of the week, did I do this? Or I need to catch up because, you know, once you make that a habit, and I don't know, I can't remember, what is it, 15 days? I can't remember.
It depends. I think it's 60 days, but it takes some time.
Yeah, to where that all of a sudden that just becomes the norm, and then you've changed what it is. And I can't, like, maybe it is 60 days. That makes sense, because, but yeah, if you can get into that and be consistent with it, whatever it may be, it'll eventually work, you know, click, hopefully. Yeah, so,
exactly.
Yeah, so, we're at about 35 minutes. Is there anything else you want to, I mean, talk about right now? We got...
Yeah, no, I mean, I really appreciate this opportunity, you know, and again, I love that I can go back and look at all the people that have impacted my life, you know, and it started back in high school, and I still get a little choked up when I think about it. You know, my wrestling coach, instrumental, you know, Sean Hall, a lot of people know Coach Hall. I mean, instrumental in my life, and, you know, it's just, you know, those things, and again, when you're in high school, you have no idea where it's going to lead you to, but just my encouragement is for people to A, dream, and then B, follow those dreams, you know, put the things in place to help, you know, achieve those dreams, because it can and will happen. It won't be easy, it won't be quick, it won't be overnight, but it is doable.
Yeah, so. I like that. Yeah, I Coach Hall, I didn't have him, but I knew him. I think he left before we did. But was there anybody else too, while you mentioned that, was there anybody else in life then that kind of put you on this path?
Oh yeah. Like, so another one was Scott Dickerson. So Scott was the promoter for the bodybuilding competition. Mm-hmm. And so, when I was in high school, you know, I was competing and so he, I sent him some, you know, I talked to him quite a bit and he saw something in me because he invited me to his house and said, "Hey, Ryan, I'd love to take you under my wing and help teach you about this sport and how to put on competitions. I promote bodybuilding competitions." So he took me under his wing and mentored me. And that was my first, look into entrepreneurship, and he really helped teach me how to be an entrepreneur. So that was a huge one, you know. And then going back to Coach Hall, quick story here was probably one of the hardest things I've had to do in my life was at the end of my sophomore year, going up to Coach Hall and say, "Coach, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm not going to go out for wrestling next year. Oh. Instead of going out for wrestling, I'm going to do this bodybuilding thing, and I'm going to compete in bodybuilding." And at the time, when I think he heard me say that, he's like, "This kid, what's he doing? He's just lazy." He just but you know what? Afterwards, and I did the thing. I competed, and then I came back and I wrestled my senior year. Yeah. So glad I did that. In both sides of it, I'm glad that I had the gonads to have that conversation, but also to go back and do that my senior year. That was pivotal and huge. So, but anyway, I'll always remember that story too.
Yeah, that's I have. Somewhat similar. So like with Coach Gebhardt.
Yeah.
So I decided I wasn't going to play. I think it was my junior year, play baseball. And so they go and I watch a couple games like, man, you know, I miss this. So I had to go into his office. I'm like, I asked him to play baseball, and he's not like his sons. He is a tough man to talk to. Like he's up on a pedestal, you like, you don't want to disappoint him. And yeah, so I went up to him like, I'm like, "Hey, I don't want to go do this, but if I'm going to play baseball," I go, I have to talk to him.
Yeah.
So I went in and I'm like, you know, I'd like to play baseball again. He's like, well, he goes, let me talk to the boys and they vote. And if they say yes, then you're back on the team. And, but he was one you never wanted to disappoint. Cause he was like my grandpa, and I'm sure you guys have people in life like that, that, other than parents, you know, maybe, but you don't want to disappoint. You're doing it cause you want to see how proud they are of it. Yeah. And one time I remember we were seniors and he was going to retire after that year. And, his son was a senior too. And it was a JV game, and he's not one that ever laughed, really.
Yeah.
You know, so we're sitting there in a JV game, and he walks by, so I'm like, I'm going to try to tell him a joke. So we're sitting there on the bench, and I tell him this joke, and then he starts to giggle a little, or, you know, chuckles a little bit. I'm like, oh, my God. Here's a different side to this guy. But, yeah, it's tough sometimes when you have to humble yourself and have those conversations, mm-hmm. and especially with somebody you respect. And yes. I'm sure, like, with Coach Hall, it was the same yes. kind of thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Have you ever had any of that?
So my high school track coach was actually my neighbor and graduated with my parents. Like, so we're really close with this coach. And my junior year, I was supposed to make it in 100 meter hurdles. Like I was supposed to go. No, my senior year. I made it my junior year. I was supposed to go back my senior year and I had the worst race. Like I was like on hurdle 8, I looked over at the girl who was running, which you should never do, and I ended up not going to state. And it was like, so I was so scared to walk out to my coach because I thought he was gonna like scream at me, which he didn't, but he's like, that's how it goes. Yeah. And he's the type of person that you like don't want to disappoint. One, because he's like my parents' like best friend and I've known him like my entire life.
Yeah.
And two, like when he spoke and told you what to do, like you did it.
Yeah.
And you sucked it up and did it. Like we had shirts that said, cause he would tell us every year, he'd say, I'm going to yell and you're going to cry and we're going to get over it. And we like, he said it every single year, and every single year someone cried over something, but because he yelled at him, but yeah. we were stronger because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those, you have those people in your life and they stick, yeah. you know, they stick in there. So, do you ever have Miss Fish? Was she there
oh, yeah.
when you were there?
Yeah.
She was one, and Mr. Delacus, I was an idiot in high school too. I was a sophomore, and I was picking on one of our buddies. And you know how you mess with your friends or whatever?
Sure.
And she checked me really good. She goes, hey, she goes, you're acting like a real jerk right now in front of the entire class. And I felt about that big. I
yes,
was tiny.
That's awesome.
And Delacus did the same thing yeah. when I was a freshman, if you remember Coach Delacus.
Oh, yeah.
He was a wrestling coach, and he was just, oh, my God, that guy was just, a fart on a scale. Like he was just bouncing around. Yeah. He had energy for days.
Yeah.
And I was acting like an idiot because I was a freshman. And as a freshman in high school, you're an idiot, mm-hmm. right? And and he knew our whole family, right? My cousin wrestled, and you know, he knew my grandpa and everything. And he looks at me, he goes, hey, he goes, that kid right there, and pointed at another kid that was an idiot. He goes, he can't help it. He goes, but I know your family. And I know that's not, and I'm like, yep. Sorry.
And I know your parents yeah, and I will tell them how you're
he's
acting.
Like, yeah. He goes, I know your grandpa and I know he would not be. I'm like, yep, I'll shut up. And but yeah, those are just, you know, people that come into your life that, you know, pave the way for what, you know, what you're going to do. So,
yeah. Yeah. And you do those hard things. I mean, you have those hard conversations or you do those hard things. And again, those what that you build off of that and you prove to yourself that I can do this or I can pull through this or I can overcome adversity. And so then the next time it comes up, yeah, I've been here, I've done this. And that you just build on those experiences.
Yeah. And I think whether it's, you know, with coaching, with bodybuilding or like us in the classroom and stuff, is you want, and same with our kids too, you want more for them than you wanted for yourself, right? So you're probably more proud of somebody winning or doing well in a competition than you are, you know, and it's the same mm-hmm. thing with, or you're crushed when, you know, when a kid doesn't, they don't make it. I know for us, we, you know, for our hurdle team 2 years ago, mm-hmm. we got 25th and they like to make it to state, right? They ran the best time. Yeah. We're all excited. We think we're in, and then they get 25th, and they leave. You know, they let the top 24 in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, jeez.
That was heartbreaking.
It's one of those crushing things. And so, like, you, like, when you talk about pouring into somebody, and I think that's what we all do in on our perspective positions, is that you're trying to make them a better person than what you were, no matter who it might
be.
And
that's why we're tired on Fridays, right?
that's why you get Fridays
yeah,
off.
That's why we get Fridays
yeah,
off
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming in. I'm glad we were able to finally get it together. So anytime you want to come in, let us know.
No,
so.
Absolutely. This is great. And it's I love being, you know, part of the community and being close to the still being close to Seidel and tied into it. But, you know, anything I can do. I mean, I know that come in, I've talked to some of the kids a few times.
The track team, yeah.
Yeah, I love doing that because, again, I always think back. I'm like, that's where I started and that's where I was. And so anytime I have an opportunity to do that, I'd love to pour into them. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.